I was doing quite fine preparing for my talk today until I had a conversation with Bob. And he referred to the talk as a sermon. That scared me. I didn't know I was going to give a sermon today. So it's my first time. I'm going to start by telling you a very short story. A curious little boy asks his busy mom, Mom, where did I come from? Mom says, oh, you were born from me after I met and married your dad 10 years ago. It's a long story. I'll tell you later. Boy says, Mom, where did you come from? Mom, oh, my family migrated from England 200 years ago. It's a long story. I'll tell you someday. Boy, where did England come from? Oh, England is one of the countries on our planet whose history dates back thousands of years. I'll tell you, it's a long story. One day. But where did the planet come from? Oh, it was created some 5 billion years ago. That's a really long story. I'll tell you someday. You get the idea. Each one of us is a story within a story within a story. And that only stops with the story of where the universe came from. And maybe not even then, because people these days talk about multiple universes. But each successive story presents a larger context for our existence. However, we only build an emotional connection to those stories that we find meaningful, because they help define our identity, and in so doing, they impact the trajectories of our lives. The other stories are merely stories. All ancient cultures, had a creation story for their universe. These stories were replete with characters and events that helped create a connection with the people. The wisdom in the stories helped establish norms and values for the society to live by. Orally transmitted stories evolved with time as generations faced new challenges. Until writing was invented, whence they took on the guise of immutable scriptures and became powerful tools for those who wanted to safeguard their position and their power. Our universe today is a lot more than mountains, oceans, and the sky. The ancient creation stories are now reduced to quaint myths and legends. But the doctrines that they spawned are still with us as modern-day scriptures. And sadly, they're often used to divide our world and put the few remaining religions against each other. Now, in the meantime, the amazing process of science has yielded a brand new creation story whose authenticity is as well established as the laws of Newton. In the last two decades, several visionary leaders have recognized that this story is more than a set of cold, hard scientific facts. It has the potential to make a connection with our deepest feelings about identity and purpose. This revelation holds within it the possibility of making a better future for mankind by giving us something bigger and more important to unify around and to infuse into our faltering traditions. Indeed, our creation story is so rich and abundant that a proper rendition would take weeks to tell. But here today, let me tease you with a 10-minute version. Okay, so what is the universe? We humans live on a rocky planet, along with about 10 million other species of life. Our planet is energized by the sun. A run-of-the-mill star that could easily be lost in the 100 billion others that populate our galaxy. About a fifth of these stars have at least one Earth-like planet around them, which could potentially harbor life. Our spiral galaxy is also typical among the 100 billion others scattered across the universe in the pattern of, believe it or not, a cosmic web. This is what the universe would look like if you took a picture of it from far, far away. Every little dot of light in that picture is a whole single galaxy of 100 billion stars. So where did this universe come from? The incredible truth that is revealed by science in the last 100 years is that our universe began 14 billion years ago as a very tiny, extremely dense, and very hot ball of pristine energy. It's the everything seed that we talked about in the story. How small? A trillionth the size of an atom. How dense? A trillion, trillion, trillion times denser than lead. How hot? A trillion, trillion times the temperature at the center of our sun. And where was this fireball? It was everywhere. Because space and even time was bottled up inside of it. This fireball was ordained to follow one single law, a law that Stephen Hawking called the theory of everything, because it can be written as a single elegant mathematical equation that explains that exhibits the richest, most perfect symmetry. And that's what I show on that slide, my version of symmetry. It was the DNA in the seed. This law was the DNA in the seed, and it made it bloom into the universe that we inhabit today. The creation of the seed was an amazing event, but even more amazing is the fact that the universe keeps creating in more and more wondrous ways. It creates through conflict. It creates by increasing diversity. It creates by cycling through birth and death. Every act of creation primes the universe for the next higher level of creativity. But a perfect fireball with one ingredient is not a good setup for creation. For this seed to blossom, it had to first fall from its perfection. This was enabled by the quantum nature of the divine law, which insists that nothing can stand still, and along with one of these random twitches of the fireball, space and time precipitated out from the rest of the energy. In doing so, they bestowed upon the universe a stage on which to exercise its creativity, and a clock to monitor its progress. This monumental separation also unleashed the first force of nature, the force of gravity, a force that creates an inexorable affinity among all forms of matter and energy. The universe had started to unravel its tools of creativity. Now, according to Einstein, space, endowed with energy, must expand. Expansion causes cooling. Cooling can cause transformations to happen, like water freezing into ice. The next force that froze out of the fireball is called the nuclear force. We believe, we believe that the separation of the nuclear force caused a runaway disturbance to the energy in the fireball, causing it to explode violently. This mother of all explosions is what we call the Big Bang. In a trillionth of a second, an insignificant speck of energy grew 1,000 trillion trillion fold to the size of a golf ball. After this happened, two more forces separated out from the fireball, the force that we call radioactivity and the force of electricity. What we're left behind are the fundamental building blocks of the universe. And I'm being a little playful here. It was a medley of what we call quarks and an assortment of electrons immersed in a pool of primordial light. This is what the universe is made up of even today. So armed with the four fundamental forces of nature and the two kinds of elementary particles, the universe was ready to start the creation of atoms, which is what we are all built off. So first came protons and neutrons, the particles found in the core of every atom. Opposing forces allow only two combinations of three quarks, each to get bound into an everlasting embrace. So that's the proton and the neutron. Another battle between forces resulted in pairs of protons to hold on to pairs of neutrons to form the core of a helium atom. The universe could have created the cores of another 100 elements, which we know are there in the periodic table today, but the ongoing cooling robbed it of that chance. The universe would have to find another way to accomplish that feat later. Now, a full atom needs electrons to surround the proton-neutron core. But at 1 billion degrees centigrade, the fireball was way too hot for this to happen. The universe waited 400,000 years for the temperature to go down to 3,000 degrees so that the first atoms could emerge. Patience pays off. And big patience pays off bigly. It was at this juncture that light, which had been held captive so far by the electrons, was able to fly unfettered through the universe and illuminate it. So, a part of the Genesis story is accurate. And God said, "Let there be light." Though it didn't happen on the first day. Also, after 14 billion years of roaming in the universe, this light is no longer visible to our eyes. Though it bathes our planet even today, day and night. Now, interestingly, it was the Nobel Prize-winning discovery of this smoking gun in 1965 that settled a 50-year-long debate on the validity of our creation story. And believe it or not, the microwave antenna that was used to detect this glow in the sky still stands on a hill just 5 miles from where I'm standing today, behind a Bell Labs building in Homedale, close to where I live. So here's my thought. If you ever feel a lack of connection with our universe, remember that the light from the fireball, the seed, is shining constantly upon us, connecting us to the very first act of creation. Well, the universe was now filled with atoms of hydrogen and helium gas, but these gases don't react with each other, and for a time it looked like creation was at a dead end. However, here's another lesson. In nature, a crisis is always the beginning of something new. Tiny variations in the density of the fireball due to quantum effects had left the gas with slight lumpiness. That's all that was needed for gravity to do its magic. Now this time, it took 200 million years, which by the way is just a blink in the life of the universe, for gravity to spin those lumps into a vast cosmic web. That's what you see on the screen right now. That is basically how the gas was distributed, because of gravity attracting it into these little nodes connected by these tiny thin filaments. So now what happens? A cosmic web is just what the universe needed to commence its next layer of creation. A large cloud of gas in one of the nodes got too dense and started collapsing on itself. Now, just as expansion cools, contraction heats. When the temperature in the cloud exceeded 10 million degrees, it was time to resume the unfinished work of creating atoms. This process of fusion releases a huge amount of energy, and as a result of that, the cloud started shining brightly. The universe had given birth to its first star. Soon, stars were bursting out of the cosmic web in the billions. The universe had achieved a new level of complexity as well as creativity, and it was celebrating with a cosmic display of fireworks. As long as the balance between gravity and other forces keeps a star shining, it keeps creating new elements which react with each other to produce minerals, but when its fuel is exhausted, a star dies under the crush of its own gravity, sometimes with a massive explosion that scatters its booty of minerals into the surrounding galaxy. As new stars take birth from the ashes of the old, the minerals in the gas freeze out in the form of little rocks circling the star. That's the explosion. It's called a supernova when the star explodes. And these are the rocks that start to go around the star. So these rocks fuse with each other to form bigger rocks, and the bigger rocks fuse to create planets. This is now a setting for the next outburst of creation, right? And the next outburst of creation is the miracle of life. Aided by a new set of ecological forces on a hospitable planet, and this is, you know, shows you what's called the habitable zone in which a planet can have liquid water and therefore it can have life. Biology can now create increasingly complex organisms with a lot more diversity in them. The new creation stories uses a molecule called DNA to memorize nature's past successes in order to keep building on them. And guess what? In a few billion years of evolution, what we have is a fully self-aware species that can now wonder at the universe from which it arose. That's us. So, who are we? We are not the inhabitants of a universe. We are a pinnacle of what its creative power has accomplished so far. We are therefore also the best conduits for its future evolution towards a destiny that we can only speculate about. We alone bear the responsibility to guide our universe to its next stage of creativity through conscious evolution. Now, advancing communications and social media have already set the stage for initiating the next global burst of creativity. However, the inspiration to overcome the obstacles to take this next step may have to come from connecting with our creation story, the one that I told you today, and connecting with it at not just a scientific level, but at an emotional level. Let me quote to you here another little quote from Brian Swim. The universe has unfolded to this point. It has poured into you the creative powers necessary for its further development. The journey of the cosmos depends on those creatures and elements existing now, you among them. For the unfolding of the universe, your creativity is as essential as the creativity inherent in that first fireball. Now, this awakening, which is what I call it, will require an effort, a concerted effort, or it might even require a whole movement. And who better to lead such a movement than those who already understand the need to go beyond scripture and dogma in religion? This is my sermon part. We need people who are comfortable with inclusive forms of worship and who do not insist on just one kind of God or a God at all. Yes, it needs people like you, the congregants of UUCMC, sitting here. I will end this sermon by telling you that a lot is already happening that we can tap into. Listen, if you can, to the visionary educator Barbara Max Hubbard. Read the books written by Michael Dowd, an evolutionary evangelist, and look at a website called the Big History Project, which was co-founded by Bill Gates and an Australian history professor, David Christian. On that website, you can sign up for a free 6-hour course that tells the creation story with just the right flair and at the right level. More than 1,000 teachers have already used this resource to teach full-length middle and high school courses on the big history. Now, a little ad for myself here. I actually teach the creation story to adult learners at Brookdale, and I will be glad to offer a free course to the UU congregants if there is enough interest in this. Thank you very much.